So problem statements, a lot of you are very familiar with today. You know, you heard the last panel, if you were in the big hall, the folks from Fox and Sony and Mortimer was talking about the disparate types of IDs across the industry, that in the data exchange between all the different actors in the world, whether it's music rights or it's audience tracking or whether it's distributors, broadcasters, you've got potential for different individual IDs for the content that traverses the wire. Results in a lot of time and effort matching the IDs, and that translates into money and frustration. So this is a slide we've had in circulation for about a year now, working with our friends at Wave 7 consultancy. But there are a lot of different actors in the broadcast content world. And it'd be great if it was just a licensor and a licensee, where we don't work in that kind of world. There's in that kind of world where there's just a one-to-one transfer relationship. There's lots of different folks who bring value and meaning and eventually also business intelligence around the files. And so it's great to have all these different relationships, but as you can imagine, ultimately there's a network effect, and there's also, but just a one-to-one here, but then there's potentially, that Richard describes as a negative network effect, where if you've all got different IDs, and you're all trying to match things, you've all got different spreadsheets, you're all trying to say, okay, is it the French language edit of this film that is currently in exhibition window or out of window, the complexity starts to escalate. So this is a slide I borrowed from Eric Hansen over at EMA around in the digital retailer supply chain, where you can scale up and you can throw more bodies at the problem. You can start to hire additional individuals to hand curate files between from studio operations to retailers, but it doesn't get at the root core issue that we want to talk about. And the promise of moving from problem statement over to solution is that the benefits of having a universal unique ID, much like the book world has an ISBN number, much like packaged goods have a UPC code or EAM code, is that everyone can rely on a common version of the truth in a non-proprietary way. They can say, oh, it's a global standard. I can see where we can start to count on, rely on consistency, bringing eventually efficiency and speed. So a little bit about EIDR, what EIDR is, what EIDR is not. This slide has also been around for some time, but you know, with the sense that a global registry designed for machine-to-machine conversations, XML and JSON, and ways in which data can be machine-readable as opposed to text strings, flexible hierarchy all the way down to subclips and all the way up to franchises and collections. We're a not-for-profit here in the States. We run as an organization on a cost recovery basis. But ultimately, that gives us the leeway and flexibility to work with all kinds of companies, like Lionsgate, with Justin's ad, and with Warner, and Sony, and Google, and Disney. And our purpose is to try to help, right? To be a catalyst for improving the situation. And our board, the most recent company was added here this year, this summer, we added CAA, Eric Iverson, who you just heard speak, formerly of Sony. He was on the board of EIDR years ago. He's back again in his role as Chief Information Officer of CAA. That's currently the lineup. You know, not too shabby. Also, this is a new kind of like lumascape here on who the membership's at. We've also added some new names here. We just added Variety Business Intelligence recently from a data analytics standpoint. That's a tremendous win for the organization and for the industry. Also more outreach into international, LATAM, Europe, Asia Pacific. So we're starting to see interest across all those regions. But I'll dig into exactly where we're at. So we've got about almost 2 million uniques of title-level IDs and edit-level IDs, and then we also have over 3 million alternate IDs. So EIDR is kind of a Rosetta Stone, a crossroads, if you will, a place where you can check in with an IMDb ID and come back out with the unique version ID of what that title is. So it provides a service there from the alt ID registry. And like a movie like Gladiator has almost like 27 to 30 different alternate IDs attached to it from different namespaces around the globe. Strong adoption. You see the numbers here from the major studios. Of course, we were born from studios and movie labs. EITR has reached tremendous penetration within the studio system, and yeah, being an ISO standard under the DOI, Digital Object Identifier, we're free from any lock-in. But the world, you've seen slides like this quite a bit today too, you know, the just explosion of number of assets, number of titles, number of versions continues to grow. We have a great, I'll give you one example. We have a great relationship with a company called Global Eagle. Global Eagle is the world's leading provider of in-flight entertainment. So you can imagine that a film that might play on Lufthansa on an international flight may have a very different version of a film that is for Emirates or for Etihad or an airline in the Middle East, North Africa, that is going to be a different edit with regionalized sensitivities. And also, how do you keep track of all those things? The complexity of versioning just in one use case of airlines is in-flight entertainment. Is significant. And they reached out to EITR and worked with us on use cases and tried to say, look, this is a great way for us to disambiguate and know exactly what titles we're talking about because there's so many versions. So where EITR stands today is kind of a transition point. You know, people talk about an inflection point, I call it a liminal moment. The definition of liminal is that between two worlds, we've reached a sense of critical mass. And ultimately, EITR is having a moment at this time. For three things. IMF for Broadcast announced this summer at IBC, the folks at the Digital Production Partnership in the UK, you may have heard of them. They've taken the IMF standard and worked with SMPTE to take it further into component-based delivery for broadcast and online video content. Next up, EMA Avail standard, many of you are familiar with that. This summer at the Lowe's Hollywood Hotel, the Digital Supply Chain Alliance made an announcement that EMA avails now at 172.2 are essentially where the whole industry is going. And the report card, if you will, of how studios are doing, how the networks are doing, is looking quite positive on EMA avails. EITR is the preferred unique ID in that world. And also lastly, Simtaxi Complete. For those of you who don't know, how many folks have heard of Simtaxi or SIM? In the room, okay. So it's a little bit more East Coasty, I would say. Harold, I think this is fair, and to Steve, but we've got Steve and Harold here from Steve from Kantar, Harold from NID. It's a little bit accurate, I'd say, around the notion that the Coalition for Innovative Media Measurement, which is what SIM stands for, is a New York-based organization founded by a lot of the major broadcasting networks around alternatives for advanced and flexible audience measurement in the future. And a whole complete package of taxi is trackable asset cross-platform identifier. So the notion that you're able to track and identify your assets playing on multiple platforms at scale in a quantitative way, in an automated way, is the promise of Simtaxi. And supported by DPP, EMA, and SIM. So let's talk a little bit about digging into IMF for Broadcast. The announcements that came just recently there in Amsterdam at IBC of the standard and the adoption and also the kind of promotion and the socializing, the network effect for IMF for Broadcast is just getting started. We are the preferred unique ID in that world. And I love this quote from Francois Abbé, who is the governor at for SMPTE's EMEA and North, Central and South America. The UUID is the key for the IMF workflow. Without it, we are dead. So ultimately, no one wants to die. But you also want to say, okay, so what is that unique ID? And in the documentation around this, it is the EITR ID. So who's behind IMF for Broadcast? Well, the names here, some great players in the world. Definitely strong in the UK because the DPP is from the UK.
Well, is a guy going to share these slides?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely.
I don't even think they're interesting.
So, why IMF for Broadcast? A couple things here. This is from their deck, and the benefits of the component-based delivery of files, so that you can take the video components and discreetly deliver them from the different localized components. So that you're not repitching the same asset again and again. If you're doing the World Cup, if you're doing the Olympics, if you're doing an international program and you're sending it to multiple regions and territories, you start to look around and say, okay, well, why am I repitching this content again and again just with the localized versions? What if we could find a way to connect these things in a more cost-effective manner? and also into the speed at which you can deliver it. So there's some data here. This is, again, DPP data on some examples around delivery and transcoding. Rolling into EMA avails. And you can stop me at any time. Thank you for that question, if you have any questions. Digital Supply Chain Alliance announced there in July at the events that we had at Lowe's around the notion that, hey, we can talk more openly or more broadly about how well the EMA avail standard is doing, and also the sense that either is the content ID of choice in that world. And so we had, there were presentations that day from all the companies listed here as to the adoption rate, because as we know, you've heard conversations today about inertia, conversations about systems and changes and the internal housekeeping and the kind of logistics of getting a new way of doing business, new business rules, new business logic adopted within organizations. There were some very positive conversations around the state of readiness, the maturity level at these different companies, and also across the content side and also the retail side. So this Google Roundtrip use case, this is something that got a lot of attention when I spoke to this in Amsterdam. Google Play, every asset that plays on the Google Play retail store today has an ITER ID. Whether it arrives with an ITER ID or whether it is then assigned an ITER ID before it goes into the storefront, then there's a varying degree of that. But overall, what Google does is make sure that everything that's code complete has an ITER ID attached to it. Originally it took them 50 hours to onboard a title. Now they estimate elapsed time around 12 minutes. The full round trip of data, if Justin from Lionsgate sends a avail to the Google Play Store and says, okay, here it is with its companion ITER ID, and then they play it out, and so all the uses, the statistics, the performance of that title can be then, on the round trip model, reported back with that machine-readable format of the ITER ID attached to it, so when you get dash, it's like a reporting dashboard, Lionsgate can say, oh, this is so much easier to have this data come back in a way we can automate this this reporting process. Syntax complete, the third of the horses in the race here. The initiative, Taxi was an initiative to trackable asset cross-platform identifier initiative, started around 2013. There was a big study around what we would see the efficiencies and the value generated by unique IDs embedded into supply chain. And what did that look like? Well, here's what it is, and this slide will look familiar too, because I think Steve and Carol are going to talk to it a little later. Standardized identification of video assets, ad ID for ads, and ITER ID for content. The SMPTE standard passed in July around the open binding of ID. I think it's the last part of this. I went too far. Okay. The ability to both identify what it is and also put a timestamp on when it played out. So you have Big Bang Theory airing on a certain night, then you timestamp that, and the audio watermark will have the ITER ID for the content. The ad pod comes up, the ad break comes up, you want to know what time that happened. You want to say these particular ads with these machine-readable format IDs played then, and it was played in conjunction with that programming, so you do attribution of the both the ads and the content at that time on channel. And there's a video service ID that either worked on and contributed to SMPTE for that purpose of saying it was on CBS, local affiliates, this time, this day, with this ad load and this content. And so, can't get through without one block diagram. What it looks like from the ITER side is that watermarks is in embedded into the content upstream. Same, similar for the ad ID, then through playout and then transcoding. What they found is that the audio watermark that they chose was one that could survive multiple translations, permutations, encodings, and then be detectable either at the device or at the through a microphone in room. And then the return map data coming back to the stakeholders. So here's the who's who supports the standard and supports SIM in general. The value, right? So I told you about that study that Ernst & Young did in 2013. What they found at that time was that if everyone adopted the taxi compliance vision, there was the the little utopian conversation around, well, where if we got to that place. Of course, everyone knows when push comes to shove, there's a lot more work involved in actually getting full adoption, getting to ubiquity. But with greater speed and transparency from management side, the value of, first off, and also just workflow automation. What do the cost savings look like? And not too shabby again. One other example that was a research study we did with EIDR and with our partner companies was around broadcast ecosystem. So this was co-led by the folks at Wave 7, I mentioned earlier, and also NBC, folks like Gina James and the team over there, along with other folks in the industry, around cost savings of setup and transmission, the ability to say, look, we could let's step up and try to find a way to make things a lot simpler and easier for all of us. So we're trying to create a virtuous cycle here. We're trying to create a world in which open standards and transparency and the ability to say we can automate everything that's possible to automate in a way that makes it easy for folks to do business with other and to connect. And so whether it starts with the studios and then signing unique IDs, you saw those percentage marks on how many studios have adopted either already. You heard Holly, Heidi, Troy mentioned that downstairs. Like when it's become, everyone was skeptical at first, but then it moved to becoming the standard. The avails window process, the delivery, from a metadata standpoint, assets, round trip reporting, which I mentioned earlier, trying to create a world in which folks can start to rely on it. Something we call like metadata dial tone. The idea that it's as easy as picking up your phone and you know that when you're making a call from one carrier, you're on T-Mobile, okay. And you're calling Verizon, you're calling an AT&T customer, that the translation is automatic and seamless, and you don't actually have to know how the call is traversing the wires or traversing the airwaves. So getting to that place is where we want to go. At the IDRS core, there are these three different work streams that are being adopted. And then a closing comment we close with almost every time from Clyde Smith at Fox, if you can't identify it or operationalize it, you can't measure it. If you can't measure it, you can't monetize it. So with that, I'd like to set this up for our conversation with Harold and with Steve from NID and Steve Davis from Kantar.